Turning our attention now to photography, taking pictures. Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota, has taught photography at Western Technical College in La Crosse. His mixed media CD is called How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. He's written articles for Shutterbug and eDigital Photo and Imaging. It's great to have him back. He's become kind of a regular on the program as we talk with him about cameras and how to take really good pictures and photos. So great to have him along. Certainly, if you have a question, join in at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Jack Socha, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me back on this beautiful fall day.
Great day for taking pictures, isn't it?
Yeah, you still can get some good ones out there, although probably not the calendar shots you might have thought you were going to take.
Yeah.
courtesy of a windstorm.
Yeah, courtesy of a windstorm. But something about fall, doesn't the air seem crisper or clearer for some?
There's an awful lot of blue sky, especially in October, early November, and that you're right. There is just a crispness in the air, and it's an opportunity to look at your surroundings a little differently than maybe you would normally, especially if you were planning on taking fall foliage shots and the foliage is no longer on the trees. It doesn't mean you still can't take some pretty interesting shots.
Yeah, well, give me an example.
Well, I just stuck a little mini article up on the site at acpress.com in our photo area, and it's talking about, okay, the leaves are no longer on the trees, right?
Yep.
Try taking a shot of some of the leaves that are already on the ground. Because in many cases, I mentioned in the article, I said, you know, some of these kind of calendar-like shots that shows this magnificent vista of color, after a while, they get a little boring.
Yeah.
They look a little like something you got from a gas station calendar. I hate to say that, but it's true. Where if you want to capture maybe the essence of the fall, try putting your camera on macro for close-up. And then look at the ground and look at maybe you'll find a pine cone with some, you know, or some acorns, you know, or something like that. And do a close-up of just that to kind of symbolize all the rest of it. And it may be more effective. There's a shot on the page there. I just took it. I just stepped out. So I'm at home today. I went out to my front, my step area there, and just took a shot of a single leaf. And it was very strongly lit from one side, and there's shadows on it. And it's not the most aesthetically wonderful thing in the world, not like your previous photographer, but it's a good picture, I think. And it was taken with a common little camera on a macro setting, close up, looking at one leaf alone by itself.
Well, I've got to go to acpress.com. I'm going to do...
Yeah, take a look. You go there. When you go to our site, you'll see two red buttons. One of them says Other AC Press Pages. And then you click on that, and you'll see a tab at the top saying Photography Area. And there's two new articles up there. There's one just showing you how to take a picture of a single leaf. And also something I put up, kind of a little tongue-in-cheek. You remember the food pyramid from years ago?
Yeah.
Well, I put up the digital camera pyramid. And at the bottom of the pyramid, remember, that's where all the stuff is you're supposed to eat. And at the top is the stuff that you really like to eat but you shouldn't have. At the bottom of the digital camera pyramid is the stuff you really should understand. And at the top of the pyramid, the narrow part, is the stuff that if you never even find it on your camera, it's not going to matter. And there's a certain amount of seriousness to it, because on the bottom are things like resolution and compression and what digital zoom is and things like that, the things that you just flat have to understand. And way at the top are things like blink detection, smile detection, you know. And some of the gizmos they keep throwing in there that you can't even locate on the camera, let alone use.
Well, Betsy in River Falls has a question for you, Jack, so let's go to Betsy. Hi, Betsy.
Sure. Nice to talk to both of you gentlemen. I spoke to you some time ago, Mr. Socha, and you said that you were turning your wonderful book into a hardbound edition.
Yes, I'm trying to keep that quiet because my wife will go crazy if I tell too much about it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'll wash my mouth out with soap.
We're trying to get it done by Christmas.
Okay.
My wife professionally lays out books, and she's in the final stage of a book for another client right now. And we figure that we probably won't get it out. We may get it out in time for Christmas gift giving, but the time it really is going to come in handy is in January when you've got the camera. So, so just stay tuned to the website. We'll put up an announcement about that. But in the meantime, for those who prefer learning a different way, we still have the CD, which is for PCs, not for Macs, I'm afraid, at this time, where it's just like me coming over and talking to you and showing you illustrations. So if you can't wait, please do buy the CD. If you are preferring to learn a different way, stand by and just check the site periodically. I'm very excited about it. It's up to about 250 pages right now.
Whoa.
And my wife is using Adobe InDesign. She's very good at that kind of stuff. I can't lay out a straight line, but she's great at that. And so we're pushing ahead. I'm working with a local professional photographer to double-check some of the stuff that I'm writing, to get a few extra eyeballs on the pages, so it isn't just my opinion. But just like the CD, a lot of this is based on teaching and just questions from users over and over again, the same questions.
Well, when you finish that book, we'll certainly have to have you back.
I'll send you a copy.
Yeah.
I'll send you a copy ahead of time so you can double-check to me and say, hey, Jack, wait a minute.
Oh, man. Well, Dan in Janesville has a question for you, Jack. So let's go to Dan. Hi, Dan.
Hi. How are you?
Great.
Yeah, I'm kind of a novice, so I don't really know that much about photography, but I had a little project that I wanted to do, and I just thought I wanted to hear some basic tips from you. The thing I want to do is to take pictures of neon signs at dusk,
okay.
And I wondered, what would you say to that?
That is not as hard to do as you might expect. Even relatively modest point-and-shoot cameras frequently have some things they call scenes, which are basically presets that set the camera for a particular situation. There'd be a sports scene, a snow scene, things like that. And there are some scenes for pictures at dusk, usually of sunsets and things like that. But you would try one of those scenes, and basically you're going to need to put the camera on a steady support like a tripod, and just click away. You also could just leave it on program, which is the basic decision-free setting, but it allows you to use something on program called the plus-minus exposure control, which I'm a big fan of. This will lighten or darken the picture without going through a lot of mathematics, and so you could mount the camera on a tripod, put it on the P setting program, and then take several shots upping and downing the light and darken until you get the effect that you want. But it's a, believe it or not, compared to a sports action, what you're trying to do is relatively easy.
There you go.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you. That's very helpful.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Thank you very much for calling. And we'll turn to Jerry in Prairie du Chien. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning or afternoon.
Good morning yet.
Okay, my wife has a Sony CyberShot camera. It's the model DSC-H3, if that means anything to you.
Okay.
But it's just perfect for me for my for taking out on the trout stream or putting in my pocket when I'm out skiing. Or it's got some nice whistles and bells, anything from program to ISO, low light without flash. Right now it needs repair. And I understand from the tech people at Sony that it's a... that it's about $181 repair bill.
Yeah, that's just a little under half of what it would cost to buy a new one.
But I don't see anything new out there that has the pop-up flash, and other than these little, I don't know, it looks like a little slit in the camera where the flash is now built. This is a discontinued model.
I would, frankly, the Sony has quite a few of what I call bridge cameras. These are cameras that have a longer lens than a point and shoot, but do not have a removable lens. And I would just start hunting for a newer model. Your model is 8.1 megapixels.
Yes, it is.
For maybe $100 more than the cost of repair, you probably could buy one that would be maybe 12 megapixels. And with the same kind of range. If you like that Sony, they've got their own design philosophy. I've got an older 6-megapixel CyberShot that I still like using. So I would just, unfortunately, beyond economical repair is normally the name of the game with these cameras, I would just go do some real careful shopping either locally or online and find out what current model Sony has that may be similar to what you have, and spend the extra $100 and buy a new one.
Yep, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You mentioned megapixels, Jack, and man, we're seeing a lot of buzz about 14-megapixel cameras, and some of them are really cheap, like $89.95 or $90.
I know what you're saying. There, if you look online and look up discussions about resolution, This is like the old days of film photography when people had these gigantic discussions on how long to develop film and what temperature and all this stuff. There are some extremely complicated things explaining. Some people claim that if you put too many megapixels into too small a square, you get interference waves and all kinds of technical stuff. The main advantage of having a higher megapixel camera is that for those of you who aren't real careful in composing your pictures, you can crop away a bunch of the picture, and what's left is still usable. But for most people, I mean, for example, the leaf shot that I just stuck up on the website, that was taken with an 8-megapixel camera, and I had to reduce it down in size by 45 or 50% to even make it fit on the web page. unless you're making big, big prints, the larger megapixels is really not that important at this point. Once you get past 8, you can make an 8x10 with no trouble whatsoever. But if you're the kind of person who crops away 70% of the picture to get what you want, that's a different story. But also, you know, I would go for a lower megapixel camera with a good lens versus a mediocre lens on a high megapixel camera. The trick is going to be that pretty soon you won't be able to buy anything less than 12 or 14 megapixels.
And how do you tell a good lens?
Well, again, I personally, I tend to stick with the companies that actually make cameras.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm talking Nikon, Canon, you know, even Panasonic, they make cameras for Leica, and they have the Leica lenses on the front, which is what I'm using now. The off-brands, the ones you've never heard of, or perhaps the ones that are made by, say, an office machine company, they're not really making the cameras. They're just putting their name on them.
Okay.
Where the companies that are photo companies, Sony would be one of those. They're using Zeiss lenses and things like that. They've got a reputation to maintain.
That makes sense. Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota, our guest today as we talk with him about photography during fall and winter seasons, and obviously talking cameras and all the accessories. And he'll be with us till 12:30 here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller here talking today with Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota. He's taught photography. He's has a mixed media CD called How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought, and several articles as well, many of them up on his website at acpress.com for your information and edification. With us to talk about cameras and photography, join in with your question or comments at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Jack, we had an email from Eric who wonders about the new, are they micro, four-thirds cameras? Are you familiar with Panasonic and Olympus?
Panasonic and Olympus. I have a four-thirds Olympus SLR that I'm very pleased with. Again, we're getting into different philosophies of what sensor size is needed and all that.
What is a four-thirds camera?
It's basically their particular sensor size and then the entire lens system that matches it. They first came out with single lens reflex cameras, and now the new thing that's coming out now are what they call the mirrorless SLRs. Basically, they're taking a point-and-shoot type configuration with a screen on the back and letting you put interchangeable lenses on it, which is pretty neat, frankly. But
yeah.
There's debate, you know, on all sides as to whether the four-thirds is the appropriate size or the APS size delivers a better image. And for the average bear out there listening, frankly, I don't think it's going to matter a whole lot which one you're getting. But the first thing to look at on any of these cameras is which lens do you want to use, and then put the camera body on afterwards. I was just talking with Bob Metcalf, who's a local photographer that I do some work with, and he's saying that an amazing number of people just go out and buy the SLR with the so-called kit lens that comes with it. And it's not a bad lens, but it's really kind of somewhat mediocre, and the results are really not that much better than, say, a built-in lens on a compact camera. And so if you're needing to go shoot wildlife or sports figures or whatever you're doing, you may have to spend more money on the lens first, and then consider which camera body to put it on.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Chris in Milwaukee, we turn to you. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Well, what? I've been looking at this Canon PowerShot SX210IS.
Okay.
Got 14 megapixels, 14 zoom, and, well, I need something that can't be any bigger. It has to be something that'll fit my pocket. So I'm just wondering what your thoughts about this would be.
Well, what are you trying to do with it? That's the question. I mean, what kind of pictures are you trying to take?
Well, it's going to be a combination, just panoramic shots. Items that are going to be quite far off that I can enlarge, and I suppose a few videos, but that's really not too much of a concern for me.
Okay. Yeah, it's not a bad camera. The reason I ask that question is that sometimes there are some limitations on these smaller cameras. One of them is that there's no other viewfinder besides the one on the back of the screen. So if you're planning on doing panoramic shots and you're going to have to carefully frame everything, you're going to have to get some kind of a little hood or something to mount on the back of it, which is going to make it bigger.
Oh.
And also, how much video are you planning on doing with it? A lot or a little?
Just a little. If I see something that looks fairly interesting, but that's
any
primary goal at all.
Oh, okay, that's good. That's good. See, some of the Canon power shots have a screen that folds out or flips around and does things like that. But on this particular model, I do not see any kind of optical viewfinder, and some of the other power shots do. I prefer, whenever they're available, to find a camera where you can also see through something else besides just the screen on the back, because if it's a really bright day, you have a heck of a time seeing the screen, and that will affect a bit of how you compose. But that camera has got a wide angle all the way out to almost 400 millimeter equivalent, and so you can bring in some stuff from quite a distance. So you're going to have to hold it pretty steady. It does have image stabilization, so that will help a little bit. But you also may want to look into a tripod and definitely go to a website like hoodmanusa.com and look and see if they have a little clip-on hood or some other device to put over the back of it to shade that screen so you can see it in bright light.
All right. Okay. That's Hoodman?
Yeah. Look up Hoodman. Just Google Hoodman, and you should find their site.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
But a nice camera. Yep. Canon makes good stuff.
Paul in Wisconsin Rapids, we're on to you now. Hi, Paul.
Yes. Good afternoon.
Hi. What can we do for you?
Well, I've got this camera, and I need to know where to take it in to get it fixed. It needs fixing, and I'm not really sure it's worth it. But the camera was about $600 probably 15 years ago.
Is it a film camera or a digital camera?
It's not a digital, no.
Okay, what kind of camera is it?
I'm not actually sure.
You don't know the brand name of it?
Nikon or Canon? Nikon. Or
yeah,
Canon, I'm thinking.
Okay, chances are if it's 15 years old, that you can go, and I'm not making this up now, you can go onto eBay and buy one for $20.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I have done that. The price, the value of film cameras, and some of these cameras were hundreds and hundreds of dollars. Just dropped like a rock. I just recently purchased, just for fun, a Canon A1, which came out in the 70s, and it was back then, this thing was the cat's meow. I mean, this thing was hexaphoto cybernetic, they called it. It was the biggest electronic thing you've ever seen. I bought it for $39.
Oh, and man.
People are, they're using them as boat anchors, and it's a crime. I really feel bad about it, but I can guarantee you that your camera, even though it was worth $600, is not.
Yeah.
Again, my photography friend Bob Metcalf had a Mamiya medium format outfit. He paid more than $3,000 for all the stuff for it. Just sold it for $275,
oh,
and was happy to get rid of it.
Oh, man.
So, I don't think you're going to want to get it repaired. You may be able to sell the lens or keep the lens and put it on a different camera body, but as far as getting a 15-year-old camera repaired, you can buy them, use secondhand, you know, eBay or whatever, for a lot less money.
There you go, Paul. Thank you for calling. Justin in La Crosse, on to you. Hi, Justin.
Hey, Larry. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question for Jack revolves around the amount of time between pushing the button on the camera and when it actually takes the picture. What affects that time?
It's a good question, and it's getting better, but there's about 8 or 9 major things that happen before the picture's taken that didn't happen with film cameras. The sensor has to be energized, all the auto-focusing mechanisms turn on, and where before, you basically had a shutter that was cocked by a spring and film that acted instantly reacting to light. And so that's what's taking longer, and they're working more to fix that. One thing you can do, though, with most cameras is if you press down the shutter halfway, It turns on the sensor, it energizes it, it locks in the focus and the exposure, and then when you press the rest of the way, it takes the picture. And that really is your best solution right now. If I can stick a little plug in, since you're in La Crosse, on November 13th, which is a Saturday, we're doing a little nonprofit thing out at the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe. It's our third annual digital photography class. It's 4 hours, and it's myself teaching some basics, and again, Bob Metcalf, who's a local pro, answering some more advanced questions, and it includes a buffet lunch. And we're not making any money on it. We're just doing it. The main reason we're doing it is we have these things to see at the shrine. And one of the things we ask people to do is, you know, please don't use a flash. And folks don't know how to turn off their flashes.
Yeah.
And so we're showing them how to take better pictures there and everywhere else for that matter. For more information, just call the shrine over there. It's 608-782-5440. And it's November 13th. It's coming up in a couple weeks. And people have really enjoyed it.
All right, there you
go.
Anyway,
so if you're in La Crosse, you may want to come out and join us for that, okay?
And, you know, I guess a digital SLR, single-lens reflex, is where, I mean, that problem is sort of resolved with that, is it not?
It's gotten a lot better. They have really had to make those things jump because most people who are using SLRs, especially photojournalists, are taking multiple shots. And you will notice that a digital SLR is remarkably faster than most compact cameras. Although some of these new ones coming out, the four-thirds thing we're talking about, which are essentially SLRs without the pentaprism, are getting up there too.
Let's go to Sharon in Maple, Minnesota next. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I think you just answered my question a couple callers back, but I was calling about the older SLR film cameras.
Yeah.
I started with a Nikon EM, and then I went to a 2000, and I went to an FA, and then I kind of stepped out of my mode and got a Canon with all the bells and whistles, autofocus, and all that stuff. Now I have a Nikon D300. So what do I do with all these old cameras?
Well, the good news is you can give them to me. No, just kidding.
Oh. No, well, I don't know about that.
In most cases, your Nikon lenses will fit on a new Nikon digital.
Yeah, I have one 85mm that works real well manually on the...
You're obviously not
all of them, though.
Right. If your camera original lenses did not autofocus, of course they won't autofocus now.
Right.
And if you do have some more modern ones that do autofocus, you may not get all the functions that the newer lenses have. But hang on to those Nikon lenses. Don't give them away because you can put them on.
How about the bodies?
Well, I'm afraid hang on to those for the day when you just don't feel like shooting digital.
I'm cleaning house. We moved.
Yeah, because I'm serious when I'm telling you that I have purchased Canon EOS Rebel film cameras for $19.95 with a zoom lens.
Mm-hmm.
People are just giving them away. And there may come a day when you would want to shoot film for some reason, simply because for archival purposes or whatever, you're not going to get your money's worth out of those film cameras no matter what you do. So you might as well enjoy them once in a great while.
There you go, Sharon.
The one with the I control the Canon AE-1.
Yeah.
That's what it was. And you just moved your eye, and then it would focus wherever you moved your eye. It was great.
Yeah, if you got the EOS lenses for those Canons, they will also work on the more modern Canon digitals.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Heather in West Salem. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just wondering if your expert has any recommendations for a family with kids in sports. We don't want a camera that's too technical. We don't have a lot of knowledge that way. But something that, you know, we can zoom way in from the stands that's not going to have a huge lag. You know, we want to catch something quickly. Does he have any recommendations for, you know, kids in sports, family?
Oh, you're not going to like what I have to say.
Okay.
The standard answer is spend $5,000 or wait 5 years.
Right. Because, okay.
Your little consumer cameras do not allow enough light in, nor are they fast enough to do the kind of stuff you want to have it done. Now, having said that, I'll go back to Canon again. There's one now, I think it's called the S95, if I'm not mistaken, that does have a larger aperture lens, which will allow more light in, which will allow you to use a faster shutter speed. But we have this is a very common question, and unfortunately, you see these pros out there with these $2,000 lenses. Believe me, they have to use those for a reason. And so to get the kind of tight Sports Illustrated cover shot of your kid making that winning shot, you got to drop the money, or else you got to wait till the technology gets better. But by then, he'll be in college.
Well,
but what about that the Canon? What do they run roughly?
I think they're in the $300 range or less. I believe it was called the Canon S95. I think it was just recently released. Let me take a look here. I'm looking real quick. There's a one called the PowerShot S95, which is one model. And again, it doesn't really matter. $399, unfortunately, right now. But what you need is look for cameras that have a faster f-stop lens. Most consumer digital cameras are shooting at what they call f5.6 most of the time, and that just isn't a big enough hole to let light in. So you need to have one where they are really featuring a faster lens.
And a faster lens would be?
F2, f2.8, and even then you're stretching it.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
All right. Thanks for calling. Jeremy in Lake Geneva. On to you. Hi, Jeremy.
How you doing?
Good.
I have a Sony compact point-and-shoot right now. I use it when I go up to Alaska because trying to conserve space, I use one of the ones that will fit in your pocket there.
Yep.
But I have a lot of problems when it comes to low light. You get the blur. Like it's kind of like dusky, and you start taking photos, and all you get are like blurs going, then not really actual shots of anything. I had thought about getting one of the Canons. I was just wondering if any recommendations for something like that.
Well, you're really in the same boat as the very nice lady who just called a few minutes ago. The joke I have in my class is that the laws of physics have not changed because we've gone from film to digital. You need to look into a camera that has a larger lens opening, a larger aperture, to allow more light to enter the camera at any given time. In addition to that, many of the newer cameras are now kicking up the so-called ISO sensitivity, somewhere as high as 6400, which could be the difference between a blurry shot and a not blurry shot. So I would really, as opposed to looking at the brand name or even the specific model as far as the features of the body, spend your time looking at the lens to see, try to find the ones that have the little bit faster lenses. They're usually a premium-priced camera like this Canon 95 we just talked about. That was $399 right now, but again, prices do drop. But look for faster. You need a lens that's faster than 5.6, which is what most cameras have at most times.
Okay, so I do remember I took photography back in high school, and I know it's been quite some time, but the lower the f-stop, the bigger the aperture, correct?
That's right. You can blame those Europeans from 100 years ago for that system. But, yeah, you got it right.
Yeah.
F2 would be ideal. And if you can find one that has an f2 lens on it, definitely think about that.
What aperture is the S95 that you recommended, the Canon?
If I'm not mistaken, it was f2, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, I left the page. But there are ones out there. There is a certain need for that, and there are definitely now the other possibility, of course, you want to have a telephoto lens at the same time. That gets to be a bit trickier. But if you're looking for a compact camera, Sony's got some, Canon's, they've all got a premium line that has the faster lens, and just look into those.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
I appreciate your
good
help.
Luck.
Thanks for calling, Jeremy. Hello to Sophie in Waukesha.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question, please. How could I love to take pictures, and I'm not professional, but I would like to take that scientifically in class. The photography, and what's your advice, please?
And you're in Waukesha
area. Yeah, I live in Waukesha area.
So you want to learn a little bit about the actual craft of photography?
Yes.
Okay.
There's angles and, also how to load pictures to the computer and all this technology.
Right. There's a couple of things you can do. First, talk to your local technical college and see if they have an adult learning class, because many of them do. They have them here in La Crosse at Western Technical College, and they frequently will offer classes on those specific topics that you have. You also may want to go to your public library and talk to them and see if anyone is teaching those classes at the local YMYWCA. There's an awful lot of non-credit teaching going on in this area because there's a big demand for it. This is why I'm doing it, because there's a constant demand for this information. And then, of course, if you want to, when you're at the library, look up some books on photography. Look up Kodak's of The Joy of Photography to see if you can pick up some of the basics of lenses and shutter speeds and all that. But I would definitely look around your area for any schools that teach some non-credit evening classes. They usually are not expensive, and they're very good. So that would be your first step.
Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. And Tyler in Wausau, hello to you.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My girlfriend has been interested in a new camera for Christmas, and we've been doing a little bit of research on the internet. We take a lot of sports photography, so we'd like one of those continuous shot cameras. I was hoping that maybe you could give me a little bit of recommendation as to what brand might be the best in like a $300 range.
Ooh, that's tough.
That's tough at $300.
Yeah, that's tough. Again, for doing continuous high action sports photography, you need a $2,000 lens to start with. So that's going to knock you out of your box. Yeah. You might want to look into some of what are known as bridge cameras. Sony makes several that have a long-range zoom lens built but not removable, and see what you can find in that area. And also spend particular time checking the maximum ISO of the camera, because each generation of camera is getting more sensitive, and eventually we won't be having this discussion about it being too dark. But again, the trick is that you're going to need a lens that lets lots of light in, and failing that, you're going to need to have a camera that has an extra high sensitivity. So look into some of the models. Ask the salesperson, what is the top ISO of the camera? How sensitive does it get? And also, what is the maximum aperture of the lens when it's zoomed out? And then just try to find those two numbers that are the highest you can find and go from there. But I'm afraid for that kind of work, you have to buy some pretty expensive gear.
Yeah. Carol, stay listening, Tyler. Carol and Randolph may have a comment on this. Carol, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to offer a solution. I actually have a snapshot camera. It's an Olympus Stylus 790. It's older, a few years old. I probably spent $350 on it, but there's a feature called Shoot and Select, and it allows you to hold down the button, and it takes several pictures in a row, and then you get to choose which ones you keep or delete. And that's a way for me to catch my son in action when he's in any sports.
Yeah, that's a good idea. There's, having been basically saying for the past half hour that you need a super camera to take super pictures, every once in a while you'll run across someone who takes a spectacular shot with a point-and-shoot. It's just that your chance of getting as many of those shots decreases dramatically.
Yeah, and so the camera you used was what, Carol?
Mine is an Olympus brand. Mine happens to be a Stylus
790, yeah.
Mine's a little bit older, but I'm sure there's a modern version.
Yeah.
And there are some cameras that have a thing called the best shot selection, where it'll take a burst of shots. That's the other thing, is that if you take a burst, of a half a dozen or 12 shots, chances are one of them may come out better than the rest, if there's some slight pause in the action or whatever. But the odds are against you unless you're using the really higher-end gear.
All right. There you go. Thanks, Carol. Appreciate the call. And Chris in Hazel Green, hello to you.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just have a question. I'm using an old Kodak camera, and I'm a potter by trade, so the main thing that I'm taking pictures of is pottery.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for a better digital camera. I don't know which direction to go, except for that I'm pretty sure I need a polarizing lens, because some of my pottery is really shiny.
Mm-hmm.
That I also need some sort of like a remote, or the old cameras had the shutter release. But
sure.
Yeah.
You're probably going to have to buy a single lens reflex, but it doesn't have to be the most expensive one. It can be a Canon Digital Rebel, for example. What you're going to need is what's called a circular polarizer, which is exactly what you say. It cuts the glare off of shiny objects. And most of these cameras do have remotes available for them as well. So you could buy an entry-level, you name it, Canon Rebel or an entry-level Nikon or the Pentax, which is pretty good as well, and then just get a circular polarizer, and you should be doing pretty well.
And with that, we have to conclude. Thank you very much, Chris, for calling. And, Jack, thank you so much.
All right. Well, thank you. Hope to be back.
Oh, yeah. We'll have you back. And take a look at his website. Again, it's acpress.com, acpress.com. There you'll find a whole lot more information. Jack's got lots of information on his website for the we amateur photographers. Appreciate having him with us. Tomorrow, Scott Craven joins us to talk about the wonderful world of Wisconsin wildlife. Thanks for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.